Well, good morning again, everyone, and thank you for being here. Again, my name is Janelle Sugimoto Matsuda with the University of Hawaii, and we received a SAMHSA grant. This is part of the Garrett Lee Smith program. Many of you are familiar with the GLS program through SAMHSA. And our program is called the Hawaii's Caring Communities Initiative for Youth Suicide Prevention. And I'm going to talk today about the kind of systems approach that we're taking to address suicide statewide, as we are a statewide GLS grantee. I have no disclosures except for the fact that our project was funded by the GLS Act. And just one slide on historical context for those of you that may not be familiar with the GLS program through SAMHSA. In 2004, the Garrett Lee Smith Memorial Act was signed into law. This was put into law by Senator Smith, Gordon Smith from Oregon, whose son died by suicide. And since then, we are currently in the sixth cohort of grantees through this program, and there are also campus grantees as well as statewide grantees. So in Hawaii, formalized suicide prevention is kind of still in its infancy, although the work has been going on for decades now. In 2008, our Hawaii Department of Health received Cohort 5 funding from the GLS program to fund what we called the Hawaii Gatekeeper Training Initiative. This was the first time that evidence-based trainings and programming was brought to our state through federal funding, and we introduced Safe Talk and Assist trainings. And I think everybody in this room, if you're here to, you're doing suicide prevention work and you know what these trainings are about. And they had, our Department of Health took a broad approach to just increase capacity statewide with some focus on law enforcement. Somebody back there asked about law enforcement, school personnel, and our substance abuse counselors, which are employed or contracted through our Department of Health. And in 2011, our Department of Psychiatry within the medical school received Cohort 6 funding from the GLS program, which we have named HCCI, or the Hawaii's Caring Communities Initiative. And I always say, when you get federal funding, you need a really great acronym when you put in your grant, so we are called HCCI. Just a couple of slides on data. My focus here is not on data, but this is just to give you some context to our state. According to just United States overall statistics, we're the 42nd highest as far as suicide rates. However, many of you know that depending on how your medical examiners or whoever controls the autopsy findings, et cetera, for your data, there's many in that category called undetermined intent, and we have many of those. And so what our Department of Health has done is to say, well, if we considered those suicides potentially, Hawaii would most likely have the 21st highest death rate if those were included. This is our fatal injuries among Hawaii residents. Again, this is just death by injury now. This does not include chronic disease, et cetera. But you can see definitely for our state, it's a big issue. From ages 15 all the way to 74, it is the number one leading cause of fatal injury in our state. And just so our task force, we look at this all the time. The numbers haven't really been changing that much over the past few years. And so it's definitely continues to be a high priority for us. And briefly, this is just our youth risk behavior survey results from the most recent 2011 survey. And I'm not going to read this to you except to point out that you can see in the parentheses in the sub-bullets that in 2009, for 3 out of the 4 questions, Hawaii was actually the highest in the nation for these 3 questions. And we were very happy to hear that with 2011, our numbers had gone down slightly. But of course, you all know that that doesn't mean the work finishes. We still have a lot of ways to go. And so our HCCI grant, our task was to build on the Department of Health's previous grant, but not to replicate. So how can we take the state as a whole to the next level as far as systems building, infrastructure building, and more collaboration? And so these are our three main goals, basically to build on previous efforts, also focus on youth, as this is a youth funding mechanism who are at higher suicidal risk. And for us in our state, those are definitely those in rural areas, and then also our Native Hawaiian communities, our indigenous communities are at higher risk. And then finally, to enhance that safety net. So as I said in the beginning, the systems perspective, we've had a lot of training going on with the first grant. We've got a lot of assist trainers, Safe Talk trainers now, but how can we start the infrastructure building and the connecting among disciplines? So I'm just going to talk about some of the strategies that we've tried to take. And the number one strategy, the number one thing we had to think about was geography. And all of you know about the rural-urban differences, but when you throw an ocean into the mix, it really makes things a lot more difficult. So just to give you a, you know, to fly from one island to another, for those of you that have been to Hawaii and have gone to our neighbor island, it costs between $200 and $300 just to go there for the day. So to do the work, there's some challenges there, and also to get geographic areas across the state to talk to one another and to have that face-to-face relationship there's some challenges there. And so our number one strategy was we really need to overcome the geography. And so what we've been doing, as you can see, is we've been working community by community to build infrastructure within the communities, as well as through our program begin to connect the communities to each other. And I'll talk about that throughout the presentation. The second strategy, as many of you know who work with indigenous communities, work with minority communities, is cultural competency. And there's a lot of different variations of what that means to people. What does it mean for a program to be culturally competent? So after using SafeTalk and Assist and kind of learning, okay, what is out there in the field, we found Connect, which is actually developed by NAMI of New Hampshire. It is endorsed by SAMHSA and SPRC, and it uses more of a public health approach, and I'll talk about that as how it compares to SafeTalk and Assist. But the number one thing we liked about it is that they were open to sit down with us and work on how to adapt the program. How do we integrate our local values, our local customs, et cetera, into the programming and not be so stiff about the language and things like that? So many of you are familiar with Assist and SafeTalk. It's really, it gets at that gatekeeper moment and that one-on-one moment when somebody is talking to another. How do you look at warning signs? How do you ask a difficult question? Are you thinking of killing yourself? And how do you refer and keep that person safe, correct? But what Connect does is it brings in our more public health, our broader public health approach, looking at risk protective factors, protocol development, collaboration, and safe messaging. And all of these things helped us as a state, or are helping us get to that next level of systems development in our work. And of course, being a public health student, I would not be a good public health student if I didn't say we weren't using the social ecological approach. But really, it definitely is. You know, for the past 3 years with our first GLS grant, we worked at just building capacity as much as we could, working at that one-on-one individual level. But now as a state, we were ready. The readiness was there to go on to build systems, to build policies, and then to start collaborating across disciplines. And also, looking at the different levels of prevention, I don't need to explain this to you guys, but I have this slide in here when I go to medical conferences and people don't understand that there's different levels of prevention. But to address all levels, we do have two projects that we put in our initiative. The first on the left is a community-based youth project, and the second is actually a project working in EDs, which is why I was very excited to hear Dr. Benson's presentation. So definitely we'll contact her after this. So our first project, which we called Mobilizing Communities at Risk, and everything does have an acronym in our grant, and these are the two goals, of course, building knowledge and capacity, and also committee awareness using a youth advocacy model. Because one of the things we noticed with the first GLS grant was, well, what stakeholders were not yet brought to the table? And we said, well, of course, our youth. If we're going to do youth suicide prevention, the youth need to be at the table to tell us how can we do better prevention work. And this is our general project plan. We've been partnering with community coordinators, or adult community coordinators at community-based organizations. We've been providing the Connect training, certifying them to become trainers. And then they will then go and most of them have an existing youth group. Some have had to recruit youth groups into their organization. And then to have the youth with guidance and safe messaging guidelines create community awareness trainings and activities, and I'll show you a couple of examples of what the youth have been doing. And so this is just a picture of our first Connect suicide prevention training. This is in January of this year. So we had about 35 folks trained, and about half of those stayed on for four full days actually to become certified trainers in Connect. So one of our community groups, our youth groups, is called Braveheart. It's another acronym, Building Resistance Against Violent Environments through Honorable, Empowered, and Righteous Teens. This is a faith-based group. And basically, they've been training youth. They've trained their own parents, which is something very important, correct? We can't train our youth to disclose about suicide unless the adults are trained, so that the adults don't freak out when the youth tell them that they're thinking about, they have suicidal thoughts. They did host a three-day youth summit, which we participated in, which included a heart-to-heart panel where they were able to ask very revealing questions of healthcare and mental health professionals, and an open house where they were able to show their parents what they had learned. And they also did a Message of Hope campaign, which is the picture you see here, where they had community members write messages of hope that they then display at community fairs, etc. Another one of our youth groups, they all have acronyms. I guess we kind of imparted that on them to have an acronym. TOPS, Teens on Preventing Suicide. They also recruited and trained about 25 students. They did a lot of activities during National Suicide Prevention Week. And they launched a t-shirt campaign, and that's a picture you can see there. I think this is kind of common now, where the kids throw statistics on t-shirt to begin conversation when they go to school and wear the t-shirts. So it's 20% consider suicide, 16% made a plan, but 85% talk. Basically, 85% told somebody in advance that they were thinking or made a plan about it. And the back says 100% care. And then our third youth group on Kauai is Kauai Leaders Against Suicide. They're just starting their programming during this school year, and they actually made a community-based short film about suicide prevention. And their t-shirt campaign is 1 in 6, basically 1 in 6 made a plan. And so just a summary of our community project, we have 3 active community sites with another 3 starting up. We're now in our second year of our project. 11 of our community partners hosted 11 awareness activities, and so far they've done 18 Connect trainings, and these are just the numbers for you to see what they've been doing for the past year. So the second project, which is my project that I've been a director for the past year, again, using the same model, using the same programming, but adapted specifically for emergency and trauma settings. Again, aims to increase health provider knowledge, confidence and preparedness. Dr. Benz and I were talking earlier that when we provide training for these folks, even though we work in the Department of Psychiatry, even though we work with emergency room professionals, we can't assume that they are still comfortable, that they're comfortable talking about suicide, even though they're mental health professionals. They need to get training in that confidence and preparedness on how to talk to a youth, how to talk to a family member of somebody who is suicidal. And then also, this project aims to establish suicide prevention protocols to screen and to refer, and how do we build more of that infrastructure and systems. So it takes a very similar project plan, again, a train-the-trainer model. So training the emergency department and trauma personnel in Connect. And the nice thing about Connect is it has 3 modules in every training. The first 2 are the same exactly, no matter who you're training. But the 3rd is specific to the discipline. And so what was nice is both our community side and our ER side had the first 2 modules the same, so they are now able to talk to each other in the same language. But they also got discipline-specific training in that 3rd module. So the EDs got more things on means restriction. They got more on screening and protocol development and things like that. And again, the long-term goal is for organizational protocol and policy to actually change. So this was our training in July, where we had, again, another 35 different folks. We pulled in people not just from the EDs, but from law enforcement, from our Department of Health system and mental health systems, and about half, again, stayed on to become certified trainers. And this is just a summary of what we've been doing since July. I've currently got 7 active hospitals in year 1, and all 7 have actually agreed to, or some have already been screening, but the majority have not, or it's very minimal, or the screening tool is about 40 years old. And so they've all agreed to at least work with me to incorporate some updated screening questions and protocols. And I've got another 10 sites joining in the second year, the current year. We have 26 EDs in Hawaii, so my goal is by the end of our third year to have all 26 on board with this project. So in July, again, about 31 ER personnel received Connect training, and 12 became Connect trainers. And so far, I don't have to tell you about the kind of red tape that goes on hospitals, so there is a process for them to schedule trainings. But so far, 5 trainings have been conducted at the various ER sites. And that's it.
We have a few minutes for questions.
Yeah.
The outcomes,
every Connect training, whether it's adult or youth, there is a pre-post survey, so there's that outcome. But also through the SAMHSA funding, we are collecting number screening, number referred, et cetera. The challenge, as Dr. Benson and I were talking about, right now all of our hospitals are moving or changing or establishing electronic medical record systems. And so while they're all screening currently, I'm still working with them as far as the technology goes to collect that data, but those will be our outcome data. Yes.
For 6 years, I was the chief medical officer of health for Nunavut, which is a Canadian territory. 85% are indigenous Inuit. They have the highest teen suicide rate in the country. You mentioned that two of your focus groups or target groups are going to be rural and Native Hawaiians. So I have two questions. One is the Native Hawaiian suicide rate much higher than the general community in Hawaii? And secondly, at least among the Inuit population, a lot of the suicides, I gather, were unplanned, but some event happened, like a kid's girlfriend would say, I'm leaving, and he would get drunk and kill himself. And this was happening in kind of epidemic proportions. So I wonder, about the element, and also about the spontaneous suicide. If you looked over the coroner's reports, could you tell how many might have been perhaps unplanned before the event?
Mm-hmm. Well, in answer to your first question, yes. Our Native Hawaiian population is definitely at higher risk when you break down our data by ethnicity. Again, we could have a whole session on how to categorize people by ethnicity. But generally, when we look at Native Hawaiians, anybody who is full or at least part Native Hawaiian is put into that category. And yes, they are at higher risk, especially our youth. Our Native Hawaiian youth are at very high risk. With regards to your second question about spontaneity, I would have to say that even with what we as adults might consider spontaneous might not be so to a youth. For example, all of us who have had training know that the breakup or loss of just a boyfriend or girlfriend, even though that might seem silly to us or spontaneous to us, that's actually a big warning sign that actually we should be looking for. So I think definitely, yes, I understand and the complexity of what you're bringing up, but I think that's why we as adults need to be even more so trained in the triggers, and risk factors and warning signs for our youth, because that actually may or may not be spontaneous depending on how you look at it. Thank you.
I think that's about it. Thank you, Janelle.
Thank you.